Good morning, everyone. Well, I know it says wise counsel in the leaflet, and it's really good when you get a text to preach on and you get the title and everything. It seems it's going to be easier for you. And then you read the passage and think, well, maybe it's different. So I've changed the title, and I hope it's still wise counsel, but I think it fits better to say that this passage talks about living a godly life. So this is my title, Living a Godly Life. There's people that say that the world is divided into two kinds of people, those who cause problems and those who solve them. And okay, I'll admit that it's a bit simplistic. We all cause problems every now and then. We even manage to make them appear when there's no need for them. But on the other side, we are also often part of the solution for the problems. However, I'm also sure that we all know these people that, for some reason or another, they just like causing problems. They like talking about other people when they're not there. They turn tiny little things into the biggest problem ever, and they make sure that everybody knows about that. And they're just very nice and selfless people, aren't they? There's also this other kind of people, the ones that see the problem, just focus on solving them, and they see talking about the problems like a waste of time. They just want to go in and solve them. And they are a bit like the polar bears or the tigers, you know, kind of in the brink of extinction, but they are there. Most of us, however, are just something in between. We're just nice sometimes and nasty others. Some people are nicer than others and some are nastier than others. But we all have a bit of both. It's normal. It's not nice, but it's normal. It happens. And it's also something that as Christians we should focus on working so we get closer and closer to the nicer side and farther away from the nastier one. And this is what this passage in Timothy is all about, to take the pain, to make the effort, to work towards a godly life, a life that it's better than it was before we met Jesus, a life that aims to be like that of Jesus. And this passage goes beyond of that silly example I've just said, because it focuses on every aspect of life, the spiritual side, the social side, and even the physical side. So before we get into that, just a quick note. Like in most things in our relationship with God, our becoming more like Christ has two sides. One that God does and one that we should do. The part that God does on our lives, we shouldn't be worrying about, because if he's promised it, he'll do it. But this passage in Timothy is for our end of the deal, what we should do. So let's see what we need to do to live a godly life. This is what these verses are about, living a godly life. When we try to make changes in our lives, there are always things that we have to start doing or do more often. And there are also things that we have to stop doing or do less often. There are things that we need to avoid and things that we need to embrace. And this is the proposal in these verses. In verses 1 to 6, we find some of these things that we need to avoid if we want to live a godly life. And in the second part of the passage, verses 7 to 16, we find these things that we need to embrace, things that will help us in our way to a godly life, a life that little by little resembles more that of Jesus. So since in the last few weeks I've been either in the crèche or away in Spain, and I don't know how much you know about the context of the letter, let me just point a few things that are relevant to this passage. And if it's been said before, then it's a free review for you. There are several problems in the background of this letter, but the one affecting this passage is that there seems to be a group of people within the church that it's teaching things that they shouldn't be teaching. Things like some kind of asceticism, which is probably closely related to some kind of Gnostic belief. I don't know how much you know about Gnostics. They thought that all in this world was evil and bad because matter was evil in itself. So everything that's matter, our bodies, things in the world, was bad. And so things like some foods should be avoided, some kinds of things should be avoided. So back to our text now. This is what we find in Timothy. There were some people in this church, Ephesus probably, that they were teaching some things that were not in accordance with what they should be teaching. They were forbidding people to marry. They were forbidding people to eat some kinds of food, probably meat. And we read of this and we think how nasty they were. And it sounds obvious to us that that was wrong, but back in those days it wasn't that obvious. In the Greco-Roman world, these two things were not so extreme as they are today. From the outside of the church, people looking at that wouldn't be too surprised to see, you know, a religious group forbidding marriage and some foods. And actually, Paul even goes along these same lines in some passages. If we read in 1 Corinthians 7, he says, "It is good for a man not to marry, but since there is so much immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. Now, to the unmarried and the widows, I say, it is good for them to stay unmarried as I am. But if they cannot control themselves, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion." So Paul actually prefers people not to marry. The difference, however, is that he's not imposing it into anyone. He's thinking, okay, for the sake of serving God, it is actually better. You will have more time, but if that's going to be a problem for you, then go and marry, you'll be happier. And the problem in Timothy is that this is not a recommendation. They are forbidding marriage, and that is that. There's no other option. And that is probably because, as I said earlier, this is some kind of Gnostic teaching. If, according to Gnostics, creation is bad in itself, is faulty, then physical human relations are also bad and faulty and should be avoided. They're also teaching some abstinence from some kinds of foods, probably meat, because, you know, it's matter. And this wasn't that crazy either. I mean, in the Old Testament, we find lots of rules and regulations about that. And it even makes sense if you think about it. Because for most people in the lower classes or middle classes, the only time they could eat meat was when animals were sacrificed to the pagan gods. You know, sacrifices that were made with animals in services, including sacred sex and all kinds of weird stuff. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, a Christian should look at that and think, I shouldn't eat that. But the argument in Timothy is that the animal in the first place was created by God, and creation is good, even very good indeed, as we find in Genesis 1:31. And secondly, whatever happened to the animal and its meat, God makes it right if we give thanks to him. And again, Paul has something else to say. If we read in Romans 14, Paul is dealing with actually this same problem. And he says, whatever you do, it's fine. You can eat, or you can actually avoid eating. Just do not judge others if they believe it's right to eat. So, we just need to be aware that there are these dangers. And it's fine whatever you do, just don't judge others. That's what Paul would say. So what do we have to learn from all this now in today's world? I think it's interesting to notice that those teachings that are so blatantly wrong for us today weren't so bad that day then. Most people would have heard of things like that. It wasn't the most common thing, but it was there in the culture. And so people wouldn't suspect of them. The second thing is that those teachings were actually somehow supported by the Bible or the Christian message. Paul is in favor of being unmarried. And the Old Testament actually rules on foods, and Paul is not against that, not in favor either. So I think the dangers are clearly are not so much in what we teach, but maybe the focus we put on the teachings. It's maybe getting something that might be right, but secondary, and putting it in the first place for forgetting other things that are more important. And let me put an example of, or a couple of examples of that. And before I say anything about that, it might be shocking, some of the things I say, so if you find it shocking, you don't agree or anything, just come and talk to me, and let's not make a big thing of it. But I think is what we're dealing with here. So let's talk about films. We all like watching films. And I don't, that's what I found out. It might not be your case. But if we're watching a film and there's a sex scene, even a mild one, even one that might be husband and wife, we all blush and, you know, get uncomfortable and embarrassed. But on the other side, if we're watching, you know, Terminator or Rambo or anything, and there are dozens of people being killed, we just keep watching. We might even make a joke of it. And it's even worse when we watch the news and they're talking about the same, these people being killed, real people in this case. And we don't seem to be too impressed. It seems to me that we are a bit obsessed with sexual sin, which is sin anyway, but we are a bit obsessed with that. But we appear to be a bit too comfortable with human death, as if watching it every day on the news were normal, and that made it less important. Just in case, and don't get me wrong, I'm not encouraging anyone to just go and watch any sex movie around and, you know. But it strikes me as weird that watching sex makes us feel worse than watching killings and death. It is weird because according to the Bible, sex in itself is good, was created by God. It's good and healthy. Sure, with some limitations and within certain contexts, but good in itself. Whereas death never, ever is good. Killing is always condemned in the Bible. So are we implying some kind of Gnosticism in our lives as well by, you know, rejecting things that are good because they're of the flesh and accepting what is bad because, you know, killing the flesh might be even good? Another example, we live in a capitalist world. Money reigns, money is everything, and people are not so important, it seems. We've had the MP scandal about spending public money to indulge themselves, things that we might be doing ourselves anyway, but that was on the news. Wasting money to pay for things that, strictly speaking, weren't really a need, were they? Then we have the bankers having to ask for money, public money again, to save their banks, and yet demanding their all-important bonuses. because you know they don't have enough to and to for the end of the month. So and that money is coming from people earning a lot less than they are in most cases. We all get enraged and crazy about that, but what have we Christians done about that? I'm not aware of any movement or any public thing that we have done. So, if you know, that's good then. But let's talk about something else, and that's a bit more of a critical issue, so I hope I don't offend anyone, but just want to state what I think it's obvious. Let's talk about abortion. And don't get me wrong, I am against abortion. I think it's wrong. But induced abortion has existed from the beginning. Ever since there's been pregnancies, there's been also abortion. And people in the biblical world knew about that. The Egyptians in the time of Moses did it. So everybody knew that. And we don't find much about that in the Bible. There's some things, but not much. However, social injustice, rich people making the life of the poor, of the weak, miserable, abusing them and using their power, it's condemned almost in every book of the Bible. And we make, which is good, but we make big movements against abortion, and we don't say anything about all the things that are most blatantly obvious and condemned in the Bible. And it's all there, from the law of Moses to the prophets to the New Testament, Jesus. Many British are suffering quite badly because of that, and we're not doing anything about that. So I think, and this is my opinion, that we are failing to be salt and light, to be godly, because we're missing the point. It's not that these other things are not important, but we are failing to do the most important things. We are putting more energy into things that are important but not crucial, and using our leftovers on the crucial and more important things. If sex is more embarrassing and obscene than unnecessary wars and killings, and if we are happy to spend more time discussing whether we accept gays in our churches than providing food for those in need, then no matter how honorable our intentions are, we're missing the point, and we are not living a godly life. These very things, very subtle things, very difficult to spot sometimes, are things that we need to avoid if we want to live a godly life. But let's move on. In this chapter 4, on the letter of Timothy, we are encouraged to live a godly life. So far we've seen the negative side, the things we should avoid, the erroneous teachings, the partial teachings. But now we have to move to the positive side, the things that we can do to live a godly life. Verse 7 is the starting point of this section and links the two parts together, by reminding Timothy that he should avoid these silly teachings and focus on a godly life. Now, I suspect that most of us, when we hear the word godly, we think of, you know, something kind of mystical, religious, something up there that makes us nicer in a religious way. And you would be right. But we might be falling short of understanding what that means then. This word is used in the New Testament, mostly in Timothy actually. About 80% of the occurrences of this word in the New Testament are in Timothy. So I think it's quite important to understand the word to understand what he wants us to do. In the Greek world, that implied a worshipping attitude towards the gods, but an attitude that it's expressed concretely and outwardly, something that can be seen, not a showing off, but showing respect and promoting the existing values. In plain English, it means that godliness includes a religious attitude, but also an attitude that it's shown to the world. Probably leaving the religious commands to help the people around us. And we can see that very clearly in this same letter, in Timothy chapter 5, verse 4, when we read the following. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice their godliness in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing to God. So in other words, being godly or religious is doing what pleases God, and for Christians, that means being proactive in caring for those around us. This is what Timothy is encouraged to do here. The passage here uses very strong words like labor, suffer, battle in verse 10, or in verse 12, set an example in the way you talk and in the way you behave. These words clearly show that godliness is not just religious attitude, not something only shown to God, but also demonstrated in everyday life with our real brothers and sisters, with our family, with our friends, maybe even with the people that are not so good friends to us. Because being godly to them is in fact being godly to God. And we find this same idea in 1 John 4:20. It says there that if anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must love also his brother. So clearly being godly is not just about loving God and worshipping him. Being religious is not just about reading the Bible and praying a lot. Being godly is getting involved in people's lives, in people's problems, not to gossip, but to help. But reading the Bible and praying is certainly part of being godly. And I've emphasized that being godly is mostly an active thing that must be carried out to affect others' lives. But this passage also makes it clear that studying the Bible and praying are crucial. In verse 13, we find that Timothy is told to persevere in reading the scriptures, probably in public for everyone in the community, not just for himself. But the idea is the same. He, as well as anyone in the church, has to study the scriptures. It only makes sense. If being godly is an active thing, we need to know what we have to do, and we will find out in the Bible. This will also help us with the first part, with the things we need to avoid. The better we know the scriptures, the better we'll know which teachings are acceptable and which ones are not. And the better we know the scriptures, the better we'll know how to help our brothers and sisters in a way that is pleasing to God and is pleasing to them. So reading and praying is crucial and basic, but it must be the first step if what we read and pray about does not materialize in specific actions towards the people around us, then our Christian life is void, empty. It does not please God. These are some of the things that we must embrace if we want to live a godly life. A regular practice of reading the scriptures and working hard to make every effort possible to live out what we say we believe. We can then conclude by looking back at the beginning. I said that the world is divided into two kinds of people, the ones that cause problems and the ones that solve them. One can be part of the problem or part of the solution. We can make small things big problems or work on solving the big problems first. Now we can choose which side we're in. We can try and make an effort to be godly, or we can ignore it. So I'd like to encourage you, as well as myself, to make an effort to put into practice the things that have been said today. And I know it's fairly easy to stand here and say, well, you do that. It's actually been quite challenging for me reading this and remember that I'm probably falling short of most of the things I'm saying now. But I think it's worth trying, and I think it's worth getting to know the scriptures better and to know their message. I think it's worth trying to be able to discern what is truly important from what is less important. And I think it's worth making the effort to put into practice what we learn as we go. Just the last example. We learn in the Bible about sharing, about helping those in need, about showing love. We also learn about marriage. The first one is everywhere in the Bible, is central to the Christian message, and is crucial in Jesus' ministry. The second one, marriage, appears a few times in the Bible, but it's not at all a key doctrine. Now, in a world where there are still thousands of people dying of hunger just because we don't care to share the resources we have with them, I really don't think we should care much whether people in civil partnerships have the same rights as people in a married couple. Not that it's not important, but I think you understand that people dying is more important. So, why Christians seem more worried about all these things? Fighting civil partnerships, but not fighting social injustice. I really don't know. But if we remain silent about social injustice, which is very big, then we have distorted Christian doctrine. If we want to live a godly life, we must at least try and fight for it. It's not easy, and I'm surely not the best person to set an example for you. But I still have to try, and we still have to try. And I'll just finish with the first words in verse 16. It says there, "Watch your life and your doctrine closely." Thank you.